Hey y'all, it's Omi again. You know, when I started this podcast last year, I was curious. And by now, if you've been listening to this podcast, you know that I'm curious about a mighty powerful list of things. One of the things I was curious about was, how do Black women and femmes and non-binary people of African descent who identify as Black experience menopause and aging in the diaspora? What does that look like? What are the conversations that they're having? What are the taboos and the stereotypes that they're having to navigate? I wanted to know this in terms of what it looked like on the continent. I wanted to know what it looked like in Europe. As fate would have it, I have been developing a very sweet connection with two sisters who have become very dear to me. Karen Arthur, who lives in the UK, and Monica Odom. So I reached out to them and I said, listen, y'all want to have a conversation with me? And they both said yes. Karen is the curator and creator of Menopause Whilst Black, and she's exploring all the ways in which Black women who live in the UK are navigating menopause in the similar way that we're doing that here in the States. We are definitely kindred. We're both Aries, so we are fire sisters. And then I connected with Monica, and Moni is this sweet, deep, soulful spirit who's a nurse and also a writer, and turned me on to Rosa Mag. Rosa Mag is an Afro-German magazine that talks about all things diasporic in Germany for women of African descent. So we had a great conversation. You know, it was like curling up with two of your best good girlfriends over a cup of tea or a really good glass of wine. I think you all are going to enjoy this conversation as much as we did. We laughed, we cried. It felt like we were hugging each other through Zoom, through the internet, through our speakers. And hopefully someday soon we'll do that in person. This is the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, introducing Karen Arthur and Monica Odom. Hey, Karen. Hey, Moni.
Hi.
Hey, y'all. Listen, for the listeners of the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, I want y'all to know that this is special for a few reasons. This conversation is special because this is the first time I've done an interview with more than one other person. So this is my voyage into this kind of group conversation, and I'm very excited about that. And also the first time that I am interviewing Black women who don't live in the United States. And this is something that I have yearned for. I've really wanted to manifest. I've been curious about. And so I'm thrilled about that. And the third thing is, this is one of the, I guess, second or third occasions that I've had conversations with people who are not in my immediate circle, but I feel so completely compelled by and have developed such a sweet rapport with the both of you, both with you, Moni, and with you, Karen. And so I want to give each of you an opportunity to introduce yourselves and tell folk a little bit about yourself. I think we can start off with your name and your pronouns and where you live and the place that you call home. And we'll start with you, Moni, and then we'll go to you, Karen.
Okay. So thank you so much, Omi, for having me. And thank you for giving me the opportunity to be part of this, because I just found my home in your place. I don't even have words for it. Let me start at the beginning. Okay, my name is Monica. I use the pronouns she and her, and I am a 50-year-old woman living in Germany. I'm born here and I'm raised here, and I have my ancestral roots in the Democratic Republic of Congo and in Germany. And it is said, I don't know it for sure, but it's said that my grandmother was from Poland, but I can't put my fingers right on that. I'm sorry, English is not my native language, so this might be a bit rough in some moments, but I really try.
You're fine.
Okay. And my biography and my history is quite typical for being an Afro-German person. I was born in 1969, at the end of 1969, to be exact, on one of the parts of the year when the sun is at its lowest and the night is at its longest. And this is quite exemplary. And I was born to my white German mother, who gave me up for adoption. And my father is from, as I said, he was a student from the Democratic Republic of Congo. And her story and his story are quite intertwined, and they are quite building up, or quite making this colonial history. This country of my origin have both. He came as a student to the part of Germany which was foremost of the eastern part, the DDR. And then he moved to the formerly western part, and there they met as young students. And then they made me, and then they got overwhelmed. So then all the isms hit, the racism hit, the sexism hit, the colonialism hit, and they gave me up for adoption. And I was adopted by my white parents, and which I refer to as mom and dad, and was brought up in a rural village here. And yeah, that's pretty much it. So for my, no, not, it, it's not, but it's it, it where my root touches the soil. And it's why I literally call Germany my home, but I also call the DRC my home. I call this planet my home. Yeah. So that's for that. And I grew up.
No, that's great.
And it's so, I share this biography with a lot of Afro-German persons who are born during the late 60s, the early 70s, up to the 80s. Much of our fathers, rarely our mothers, were migrating to Germany, were coming to Germany for a plethora of reasons. And much of us are not, haven't been embedded in their family of origin, but were raised by single moms, or were raised in foster care, or were raised in orphanages. And this has changed during the years. And the history Afro-German persons have now is quite a bit different was what it was back in the days.
Thank you. Karen, how about you?
How about me? Hello, Omi. Hello, Moni. Interestingly, when you said your name is short for Monica, my dear aunt Monica, who I talk about a lot, who passed sadly in 2015. I don't know, it just made me feel a little bit closer to you. I don't know, I was feeling quite overwhelmed when you were talking. So, my name is Karen. My pronouns are she, her. I live in London in the UK. So, both of my parents are from Barbados. My mother came to Barbados, sponsored by her father, in the early 60s, and my father, they weren't married yet, my father arrived I think a year later, and they knew each other in Barbados, but they didn't, I think they courted, but they didn't know each other properly, as became apparent later on. But he came over and they got married, and he couldn't find work. She found work. She worked in a typing pool, they called it, doing shorthand and typing. It's funny because I've had this conversation with my mum. My mother has a very fair complexion. It's very pretty. And we've talked about how she found it easier to get work than my father, because my father was darker skinned and a man. And so eventually there were jobs going in a small town, market town, 80 miles outside London, called Banbury. And so my mother and my father took me and my younger brother at the time to live in Banbury, where there were only two other black families. One in a population of 30,000. And they spent time trying to assimilate, really. Mm. So it's interesting because I lived there for 18 years. I was brought up there. My parents divorced when I was about 14 or 15. But I never felt that I was going to stay in Banbury. I always felt it was too small. I knew there was something outside, but I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. My father wanted me to do something like be a doctor and stuff like that. But he left just as I was making decisions about what course I was going to take at school, mm-hmm. which meant that when I was really into dance. So when I said to my mother, there's a performing arts degree, I really want to go and do a degree in, you know, performing arts, she just said, do whatever makes you happy. So I was off. I was gone. So I flitted off to do my degree. And a few years later, I started teaching dance. I taught dance in schools for years. And then I moved across to teaching textiles. And then I moved across to what we call the pastoral side. I don't know what it is, what the equivalent is in America or Germany, guys, but it's like you look after a group of children. So I looked after, let's say, 300 children. I was in charge of making sure that I liaise with parents and that kind of thing. Because, you know, unhappy children can't learn. So my job was, I suppose, to make sure that they were happy, okay. sort of, that kind of thing. And I did that for years. I mean, we'll probably go into this in more depth, but basically I don't do that anymore. Yeah, I'm a fashion designer now. I'm not a teacher. I'm a fashion designer. I'm a sewing tutor. And I've got a bee in my bonnet about diversity and the menopause landscape in the UK. So that's how, I suppose, you know, Omi and I connected, isn't it, really?
It is.
Where do I feel home? Now, this is an interesting question because I love London. My daughters are Londoners. But when I go to, of course, we're in a different situation now because I can't travel. But when I go to Banbury, I love being in the countryside because in comparison, it is countryside. And a lot of my family are there. My sister's there. My brother's there. My nieces and nephews. But when I go to Barbados now, I feel so much at home there, even though I still have a lot to learn about Barbados. Mm-hmm. So I didn't go I went for the first time when I was 21. Mm-hmm. I'm now 58. And I feel like I could live there. Mm. I think that COVID and this situation has really made me think about not wanting to be in London. Mm-hmm. anymore. Mm-hmm. I want to be somewhere where I can feel the sun on my face, hear the mm-hmm. sea, or get to it very quickly, and be near family. I would normally go to Barbados every year. I didn't go last year because my daughter was about to give birth, and I didn't go this year because global pandemic. Yeah. Yeah. So I'm really missing my Barbados mm-hmm. family. So we'll see. So home is a mixture of things. I hope that answers your question. That was a long ramble.
No, it does. I appreciate it. I'm just also like, it's landed on me that we are in this footprint of 50, right? With mm-hmm. Moni being 50, about to be 51, me being 50, mm-hmm. and you being 58. Mm-hmm. And like the remarkable opportunities that are, I feel like, for me personally, like to shift a lot of my thinking mm-hmm. and shift mm-hmm. the things that I want to do. I have a lot of appreciation for the fact that you were like, and so now I'm not teaching. Now I am a designer and a content creator. And I'm also like busting up these stereotypes around menopause and aging for Black women in the UK. That feels mm-hmm. so important. You know, this whole Black Girls Guide came online for me at the tail end of a sabbatical from social justice work. Y'all, I was worn out. Like I was exhausted. Mm-hmm. I was crispy. I found myself really angry mm-hmm. and not happy mm-hmm. about the work that I was doing that was for the liberation of people who look like us. The liberation of our folk. I was like, how can I stay in this movement space? How can I stay in this space that's been so a part of my whole adult life if I'm angry and if I'm tired? Yeah. And so these conversations with, you know, Black women and femmes and gender non-binary folk have just given me so much life back. And also are reminding me how creative I get to be. Moni, I'm struck by that, you know, we didn't talk about the things that you do in the world. And I know part of your identity is around healing practices, both as a nurse and as someone who identifies as a healer who is in touch with the natural world. I do want to give you a chance to talk about kind of some of the ways that you have seen your life shifting as you made that transition from your 40s to your 50s, and what are the things that are bringing you joy right now?
I'm still, as you said, I started my healing profession journey on my with 17 when I decided to become a nurse in 1987, in the late 80s, exactly. I was totally impressed by a neighbor of mine who is, was a nurse, and her husband, who is a nurse as well. They were in the age group between my mom and me, and they really helped raise me in some kind of way. And I was very impressed by her and how she presented to the world. And one day she took me with her to work, and that was that. And I was clear, nursing it is. And I did this until last year. I worked at an ICU for most of my nursing career, and then I decided to stop. Now I'm teaching in a nursing school. What brings me joy these days is that I gathered the competence to make that shift, gathered this deep yearning and this deep wanting of mine to heal, but put it in another context, in the context of teaching first and foremost, but in the other context to stand in my, may I say, witchiness at this point. My grandmother raised me with a huge respect for nature and a huge respect for the spirit world in a Catholic setting. She always was all about those stories and of the saints. And she was a farmer. And she taught me from early days on that nature is sacred. And I grew up with that concept, and I always knew it. And this is why I early developed a love for plants, a love for animals, a love for nature. And I found my joy and my peace when I'm the most connected to this part of me being me. I can be completely me when I'm in contact with the elements. And I can hug trees, I can talk to the tomatoes. It doesn't even matter what I do. I'm just, yes, it brings me deep joy. And especially in these times, and especially also during my nursing career, the walk back home from the clinic, the foot walk back home, literally the trees and the plants on my way from the ward back to my home, they literally healed me. They lifted me up, they hold me, and they made me whole again. It's sometimes quite difficult to put it in words, because this kind of communication is not with words, it's just with feeling and getting in tune with my surroundings. Yeah, this is what brings me joy these days.
I love that. Karen, you were talking before we got started with recording about how your mothering has transformed in the new identity you have now, a year into being a grandmother.
Wow, yeah.
I would also love to hear from you, like, what are the things that are bringing you joy right now?
Yeah, I want to say so much. And I also want to say I look for it. Mm-hmm. I want to speak to very quickly what Moni said. I loved what you were talking about. Mm. First of all, a fellow tree hugger. That just makes me so happy, honestly. I love a good tree. It's almost like, because we can't hug people, that hugging trees, I've always been a tree hugger, but I have ramped it up during my allotted time to walk during lockdown. And also a parallel is that I now work from a studio, and the walk to and from my studio, if I go a certain way, I walk along a river. Mm-hmm. It's a similar, maybe it's because I was brought up in the countryside, I don't know, but also about the power of greenery and water. And it's just such a healing experience. It literally adds 20 minutes to my walk, but I don't care, you know. My mothering, yeah. Oh, so I have a grandson and my eldest daughter and her partner, and he's just turned one. And the reason I'm stuttering, I suppose, is because I'm very aware that I don't want to be too gushy about my grandson.
I know.
Yes. But bear with me.
don't hesitate at all.
Listen, no. Okay. All right. Oh, okay. No. Yeah. Wow. I got told, didn't I? I just got told. No, I'll tell you why. I know what that is. And that's from when I was bringing my children up and the relationship I was in at the time. So I will thank you, because I will own that, because this is what is bringing me joy, watching him, his curiosity, his growing. And when my children were this age, I didn't have the luxury of just being, because I went back to work when they were both 3 months. One of them was 3.5 months, one was 5 months. I had to work because we had a big mortgage. I was in a relationship. I was trying to do all the things and be all the people. Whereas with my grandson, I'm able to just let him discover. I'm not, you know, it's just, I mean, human beings are fascinating anyway, but I'm noticing it because it's something I didn't realize when I was bringing my own children up. And also what I'm loving is watching my daughter become a mother, and how she is, I'm gonna say she's bossing it, and she's not someone who reads all the books and feels you have to do things. She also lets her son do what needs to happen. So for example, my daughter is a food writer, and she's very interested in the relationship that we have with food. And she was feeding him today, sat him in his chair, and she lets him pick the food up and, you know, feed himself. And he was getting quite distressed. He wasn't in the mood for that. And she said to him, "That's okay. Food time shouldn't be stressful. If today isn't the day that you don't want to sit down, then that's fine." And took him out. And I know for a fact that I would have forced that.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
Do you see? Because I would have been told 30 years ago that they have to sit down and eat the food. And if you let them do what they want to do, then they won't learn. But she was like, "It's stressful for him. It's stressful for me. Why would I do
Why
that?
Why would I do that?" Jesus. Oh my gosh.
And it means that the whole atmosphere in the room, and all he did is she got him out and he still ate. He just didn't want to sit down at that day. Sometimes he does, sometimes he doesn't. It's like she knows, she has the confidence to just let him grow in the way that he wants to grow. It's an interesting, and standing back and watching that, knowing what I know now, and remembering my experience of motherhood when she was that age, which just was not the same. It was very stressful in terms of feeling I didn't know anything, having my partner's mother tell me I need to do things in a certain way, and then also the pressure of having to rush back and forth from work. What's wonderful also about what I do now is that I can drop everything pretty much when I need to. So I can give her, if she needs to go off and do something or just needs a break, I can step in. And I love that, because it's actually made me more organized, because if I know I'm having him for a day, It means that the day before I do all the stuff, you know, I make sure I'm a little bit, you know, more on it. It's a beautiful, grandmothering is, wow, it's something else. And it's something they don't tell you about, or they tell you, but you don't listen. Mm-hmm. More to the point, actually. So it's a different, it's hard to explain unless you're a grandmother. And that sounds a bit icky, but it is the way it is. It is, it's just the way it is. And I am so grateful, so grateful that I'm, one, able to see them. And to, but even during lockdown when I couldn't, we were FaceTiming and, you know, so it's just, we talked about the fact that he brought the joy to, he brought it just by existing, just by being in the world. And I'm glad that I can appreciate that.
Yeah, that's how it should be, Karen. Something that you said, which I think I want to explore a little more deeply with both of you all. You bearing witness to your grandbaby being loved up on and respected at 1 year old, already respected for his personhood, already respected for the energy that he's moving with and the decisions that he's going to continue to learn to make, that he gets to flow. And I think that, and I don't know if this is the same for y'all, like, I feel like I'm either relearning or unlearning what that means for me. Like, there's so much BS that I was taught or absorbed or observed around how I should show up and take care of myself. You know, it's like, don't. Oh my God, Moni. Like, you cannot center yourself on me because that's selfish.
Yep.
That's selfish.
Yep.
And you can't.
This is going to be a 3-hour podcast. Because literally, we're just getting started, honestly. Like, the unlearning. It's the unlearning, stripping it back and then starting again. It's constant. It's constant. So I hope you're comfortable.
Totally. I call it shedding my skin. One of my soul animals is a snake, and I'm constantly shedding and de-learning and... sometimes even forgetting, and this moments when I de-learn or forget, they are quite blissful. And I'm so, it's such a relief to put those old conditionings from my shoulders, and hearing you talk about your grandson and how he can, at that tender age of 1 year, always decide when he wants to eat and when he doesn't want to eat and how he wants to eat. Does he want to run around with this piece of fruit, or does he want to sit and eat it in while contemplating? It was like opening the window and letting in a breath of fresh air. It was, thank you so much.
Yeah.
And it was not gushing at all. It's a healing experience to have to share all of this with you and to feel each other's joy. It's just giving me so much right now. Thank you.
It's critical. I know that, you know, Karen and I have already had this conversation, and so I feel like this is a continuation of it, where, you know, when you're looking at the full spectrum of your lived life, and all of the messages and BS, and also good wisdom that you collect along the way, you get to sort it out. Like, you know, you get to sort all this out and say, well, okay, now this is a thing that I was gifted, and this is a thing that I'm going to hold on to. This is good. This right here is good medicine. And this I was gifted, and this is bullshit. I'm going to let that go. Like, it's not okay with me to any longer prescribe or ascribe to that particular thing. And I feel like with aging and menopause, some of the conversations that I did not have, that I'm now getting to have, I don't want to problematize aging. I don't want to problematize menopause. I feel like so many people who reach out to me on Instagram or on Twitter are coming from a very negative, complaining place. Like, the very first thing that they are sharing with me is all of the hard and I won't
listen.
Louder for the people in the back. Louder for the people in the back.
And then a whole list of all messed up stuff that's happening with them. And I want to acknowledge that. I want to affirm that. And I also want them to think about this. What is the portal that you are standing in right now? What is the new iteration of you? What do you get to do that you've not done before? Who do you get to be? Who do you get to claim? Yeah. And when you say that to some folk, they're like, I just want to know about hot flashes. I said, we could have that conversation. That's an important conversation. I also want to know how you're experiencing intimacy. Are you having orgasms right now? Because you should be. Because you should be. And it's hard to sometimes get people to let go of the negative narrative. Even for myself, it's been hard sometimes to let go because it's the narrative I know. It's the narrative I'm invested in. I'm wondering what y'all think about that.
Oh, this is so, may I?
Yeah, go for it. I'm coming.
In my last year before I turned 50, when I turned 49, I said that, okay, I sat myself down and had this conversation with me on, okay, how do you want to be in this pre-menopausal, menopausal phase of your life? And I'm brought up in a culture where the life of someone who is identifying as a woman is brought up into the adolescence and then in the phase of motherhood and then in the phase of Crohn's. So I was totally, the phase of my adolescence was heavily dictated from the outside. The phase of the motherhood, I wanted to have children, but it just didn't happen. And then I was, okay, these two phases are gone. How do you want to be in the third one? And then I decided this is the phase I am going to say where I want to go, what I want to do, how I want it to happen. And I wasn't willing to buy into this hormonal chaos theory, as I call it, because I think this shift of hormones, what is happening, is just one tiny, tiny part. And I don't want that to be, corrected, or I don't want treated, and I don't want to manipulate it, because as Omi said, it's a portal. And I want to walk with my senses heightened and my consciousness fully there. I want to enter this portal, and I love every bit of it. I can't say that my environment does it. I don't think so all the time, but they will have to deal. And the changes, I find them amazing and not annoying, because I feel initiated. I really feel initiated in something. In something way, way bigger than I already can see, but it's an initiation, and I don't want to miss any second of it. Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Girl, yes. Go on.
I love that.
Don't care.
I just, I know, I feel a little bit emotional. Oh my God, guys. I'm tired of people saying, oh my God, menopause, I'm so scared, I'm so worried. No, I take that back. I'm tired of women who are already going through menopause saying that it's this terrible thing. I'm a bit, I was involved in an event recently and I was a part of, I was one of the experts, and I think I went last, I think, and they were talking, the other people were talking about all the symptoms. They were reeling off all the symptoms and talking about this happening and that happening and estrogen does this and da, da, da. And somebody put in the chat box, you're not selling it to me, or something like that. And when it was my turn to speak, I was like, I kind of need you to know that personally, menopause has been the best thing that's ever happened to me. In that, I am finally my true, honest self. And if I find myself not being honest with myself, I mean, like my motives for doing things, I have a word with myself. And I find myself saying things, like I feel like I'm changing all the time, to the point where I'm in this conversation with you guys. I would not have been ready for this conversation even 6 months ago, you know? And I feel that there was so much I was thinking about when you asked about, when Moni was talking, but also about when you ask about relearning, unlearning. I went through a stage where I felt really angry. And I mean angry at the lies I've been told. And the, I'm going to say, propaganda. Almost a vendetta against women being their true selves. I spent the best part of, you know, I'm going to say 58. So 53 years living as someone that really isn't this person speaking now. Whether it's the way I looked, the job I did, the way I showed up in the world, the way I parented, the lover I was, the partner I was, what I wore, everything. And I feel like that's just a crock of shit. Sorry. You know? Which is why I can't shut up. This is the thing. Who knew I was going to be starting a podcast? Like, who told me? Who said for me? But I feel like the reason I, you know, start speaking is because I didn't see women who looked like me talking in the UK about menopause. That's it. Full stop. What I did at first was think, oh, I'm not looking hard enough. Maybe I need to look somewhere else, you know? And then I realized that, okay, so it's me. And what this speaking up is doing is helping me to find similar women so that my daughters and millennials and Gen Zs and whatever the hell they're called aren't dreading this time in life, you know, aren't thinking, I don't want to get old because I, you know, my bum's going to sag and I'm going to get a pot belly and blah, blah, blah. You know, talking about how awful it is. Listen, lots of things are awful at any part of your life. This is just another part of it. So menopause allows you to embrace it. I'm not in a habit of wishing any part of my life away. I believe that every single layer that happens brings you to where you are now. Okay, so all the stuff that you would call rubbish, you might call rubbish, like a breakup or a poor mental well-being, that kind of thing, has made me the person who can speak up now. If we prepare and if we know and if we see women like us thriving, living, getting on with our lives, speaking up, then it means that younger women are going to go, oh, I want to be like that. Oh, it's not that bad. It's not going to be this big, not being young is the end of the world, because it really isn't. It really isn't.
That's right. I think, like, how to be fully present with yourself no matter your age feels like the message that I want to keep iterating to folks. It's like, if you are 28, I want you to be fully present with yourself. And I want you to be curious about yourself. And I want you to know that you can reimagine who you are and reclaim who you are and do all this unlearning, no matter if you're 28, if you're 38, 48, 58, 68, 90, like at any stage of this game, until you take your last breath, this is yours.
Hey, y'all. I hope you are enjoying this latest episode of the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. Before we continue with this episode, I wanted to bring a word from our sponsor. Before I started working with Kendra, I asked them to share more about themselves and their values. And here's what they had to say. We started Kendra with a seemingly simple mission: empower people who are experiencing the hormonal changes of menopause to care for their bodies naturally, safely, and holistically. And what does that look like? plant-powered, estrogen-free essentials that do what they promise. Kendra is science-backed support made by women and tailored to you. And I love hearing all of that because I wouldn't want to partner with anyone or any entity that is not natural, safe, and holistic in their approach. Kendra's line of Peri, Minno, and Post Essentials includes a daily vaginal lotion that has a revolutionary reusable applicator that dramatically relieves vaginal dryness, a sleep-enhancing supplement, an energy-boosting supplement, and a dynamic daily wellness supplement, all thoughtfully designed to target and relieve any of the physical manifestations we have along this menopausal journey that sometimes includes hot flashes, brain fog, and mood swings. Kendra has a great offer for our listeners. For any first-time purchasers or subscribers, you get 20% off anything you wish. To get 20% off your first order or subscription, go to our kendra.com/omi20. That's our kendra.com/omi20 to get your discount today.
I think that's why I've been a little obsessed with Lovecraft Country. I know some folk have watched it, and I'm not a horror
fan. I've been told to watch it. I haven't watched it, and now I'm going to go and watch it.
I'm trying to get my hands on some broadcasting system who is bringing it to Germany. Please.
Oh, I don't know if you have access to anybody who has HBO Go or HBO Max and they have a login that you can use and watch it on your computer. I hope you can do that, Moni, because y'all, when I tell you this has been such a mirror for this moment that we are in, but also particularly the mirror that I see in one of the characters who's played by Anjanou Ellis. She plays a sister named Hippolyta. And Hippolyta, her whole journey to reclaiming herself is so, like, I was in tears the whole episode that she takes this intergalactic, interdimensional journey. And I do feel like menopause is an intergalactic, interdimensional journey. Moni, when you said it was an initiation, I about jumped. If I didn't think I was going to knock over my laptop and my... do this whole conversation, I would have jumped up and ran around my room because it is an initiation.
Totally.
You know, and I've said to people before, I said, you know, when you watch a movie and somebody's shape-shifting, it doesn't look like it's a pleasant experience, but it's a necessary experience. That shape-shifting moves them from one iteration of themselves to the next where they are fully realize it's this very powerful entity. And I do think that, you know, I'm sitting here talking to y'all right now and my belly has decided it wants to come up out of my jeans and just lay.
Let her be.
Like,
you know what's interesting is that we are fixated in this world with everything having to be easy and pleasurable. Mm-hmm. But the stuff that's actually worth it isn't, you know, the medicine that, you know, that medicine, that cod liver oil that you had when you were young, that wasn't pleasant, but it was good for you. Growth, right? Growth is not comfortable. And so this fixation with, oh, I just want to, you know, feel a certain way. I just want everything to be easy. That's stuff that's not worth it. I mean, I don't know, what am I trying to say? I just feel, there's a phrase, nothing that's worth having is easy. Ah, that'll do.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That'll do. Keep that in, yeah?
And I would love for both of y'all to speak to this. You know, here in the States, my observation and my experience around how the world sees me as a Black woman is real tricky.
Yep.
Real tricky. You know, everybody wants to be a Black woman. They want our style. Mm-hmm. They want our flair. Mm-hmm. They want our affect and our cadence and the way we speak. Mm-hmm. They even want our bodies. Mm. And they want our breasts and our butts and our all of that. But they don't actually like us. Mm-hmm. And they don't want to protect us. Mm-hmm. And they problematize us.
Yep.
And anytime we experience harm or trauma, we get blamed for it. And so I have noticed as I'm getting older, all of those things that are true, the way that somebody wants to say, oh, girl, I just love your style. But then they don't want to believe me when I tell them about my trauma. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, you don't look 53, you look 33, oh. As if that's a compliment for me. I want to look like a vibrant ass 53-year-old. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right? Like, don't invisibilize me. And so I'm wondering, what do you feel like are the unique experiences for Black women in Germany and in the UK from your perspective, certainly from your personal experience, but what your observations are around like how Black women are treated and also how they're treated as they're getting older?
Ooh, wow.
Oh, you got
that. I was sitting
in my mind's eye, Karen pulled out a pad and a pencil.
I was sitting with this question for a while, and I came up with some words, and what was first was invisible in some kind of way.
Yeah.
The difference between how Black women are seen here in Germany, it's not so much how you just told us, Omi, it's the same. And we are okay as long as we function, and we are okay as long as we do what they are supposed us to do. And I can't tell the times when people came up to me and say that, oh, you don't look like 50, you look so much younger. And I have my partner's 10 years younger than me. So when we came together a few years ago, I was very conscious about this. And I have to be honest, I was glad that I didn't look like 45 or what people think 45 should look like. But then in the last 5 years, it shifted totally. And I was telling myself, why can't I look just the way I am looking without having this age stamped upon me? But by the way, what do you expect a 50-year-old person to look like? What do you expect me to be like, look like, act like as a Black woman in my 50s, having spent my life in Germany? And do I want to be in your expectation range? And I clearly do not want to. And I was brave enough a few months ago to let, and this was a big one for me, we have this racist mass murdering in February in Hanau, where a racist sniper shot so many people in a shisha bar. It was horrible. It was so bad. And we have racist attacks coming more and more to the surface and happening more and more often. And this year, I just didn't hide my pain about it. And I didn't hide it in a corporate environment where I'm in. And I let them see, I let my white coworkers see my tears. It was one of the bravest things I've ever done. And because I was no longer content with being okay for them. I was letting them see my pain, and this was a conscious decision, because I don't want to play this role for them, for me, for a community, for anybody, any second longer of the strong Black women, because I'm not. I'm not, at least not 24/7, and at least only to the terms how I define strong for me. And I wouldn't have done this 10 years ago.
No, I think that's your answer. I wonder, with the relationships that you have with other Afro-German women, and also I know that you have connected with a platform through Rosa Mag. And I know some folk may not be familiar with Rosa Mag. I feel like there are voices that are not familiar to me, that are not my voice, but feel familiar to me because they feel like, as a part of the diaspora, as women of African descent, we are having similar experiences that are unique in the context of where we live.
They are gorgeous.
Right? Does that make sense?
Totally. They are gorgeous. They are a gorgeous group of young women in the age group between the beginning of 20 and the beginning of 30 years old. And they are the founder. Siani just brought up this magazine because she just wanted to have a magazine in Germany for Black women. She would just wanted to have a magazine for German-speaking women in the German-speaking countries like Austria, Germany, Switzerland, and birthed what she wanted to see in the world. And it's amazing. And I love it. And she gave such a big gift to the community. And I'm very happy and I'm very blessed to be part of it. I'm the oldest. And what Karen said before, this, it's a bit of paving the way. My experience that I make with menopause may or may not be helpful for the ones who come after me. And Omi, I think it's what you said as well. And this is how I found you actually last year. It's so beautiful. I was looking for someone who was on the way already. And this is how I found you, because I thought, I can't be the only one. Mm-hmm. Even if I look not in the European room, but have to look in the US. But for me, it's just us sitting here and talking. It's just, it's a dream that has manifested.
It's magical. It's magical. I imagine us, I have been imagining us in the future, sitting around a table with a hot chocolate or a... Yeah. rum or thank you. Omi,
it's just,
you're welcome.
You just,
so Karen I want to know, for you and what you've experienced in the UK, does that feel similar to you? Because you were like, yes, like I was like, okay, what's on Karen's pad, what is she writing? Well,
Okay. I feel like I'm going to make a confession. I don't know. I said to you before, Moni said something about you wouldn't have done this 10 years ago. Well, I'm saying I wouldn't have done this 2 years ago, you know. First of all, yes, always had the, you look younger than, I actually used to relish telling people my age. Mm-hmm. First of all, women would be surprised that I would say my real age, and then people would say, oh, you're making it up. Mm-hmm. And then I would say, well, I know I look younger and I like getting older, so we're good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, I really don't think that I feel the 58 that I feel I should feel, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like 58 is, when I was 21, I thought I'd be dead at 58, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like, it feels so old, but I don't feel old. That's, I don't feel like I think people think I should feel, I don't know. Mm-hmm. The other side to that is, I have always been wedded to, for a long time, to the way that I looked. Mm-hmm. So I've prided myself on looking a certain way, having a certain figure, you know, being guys doing double takes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there was this shift when so a couple of things happened. First of all, I stopped dyeing my hair. Mm-hmm. I have long locks, and I was getting to the stage where I'd look at the TV and see the adverts for L'Oreal telling me to reveal the true me, mm-hmm. and shouting at the TV and going, but this is the real me. So what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And also the fact that I, dyeing my locks was a whole day of my life that I could do without, frankly, mm-hmm. you know, finding the right shade, washing. It's just long. I've got time. I got things to do. So I stopped dyeing my locks, and then I got called brave simply because I couldn't be bothered to put a colour in my hair, which I thought was quite funny. I'm not slaying dragons, love. I'm literally just, you know, not dyeing my hair. And then I remember an occasion where I got called auntie by a younger woman. Yeah. I was on the bus. And this woman got on with her small child, and the small child was trying to get up on the seat next to me, and I helped her. And the woman said, tell auntie thank you. And I was like, who are you talking to? I was bitch, you know.
Did you look around? Did you go?
I was like, bitch, you know. And she got off. And then they, you know, the journey carried on, and then they got off, and the little girl waved bye-bye to auntie, and I'm sitting in my feelings and having a word with myself, because I suddenly, it felt like I'd gone from this I'm going to say desirable. You know, mm-hmm. this is me caught up in my validation, outside validation, mm-hmm. to this older woman and nothing in between. And I was upset, so upset that I wrote a poem about it, which I have performed a couple of times mm-hmm. at some spoken word event. I was vexed. Anyway, the other side to that is that feeling of, I felt like society, I don't know, this is my confession, I don't know whether this is as a black woman mm-hmm. or as a an older woman or both, but that whole idea of what you said about invisibilizing, mm-hmm. but I can't even say it, invisibilization, I don't know if it's a word, but it is now. Mm-hmm. Basically, the moment that I get to a point where I find my voice and I don't give an F-U-C-K what people think of what I say is the time I'm also supposed to be quiet. No, 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 no. That's not about to
that
happen.
That would be fuck, Karen. Yeah.
Is it? Is it? Right. So the moment, if you think about it, we get older, we gather all this knowledge and experience, and at a point when we are ready mm-hmm. to, you know, impart this wisdom and give it out into the world, mm-hmm. we're also supposed to be quiet and let the young, yet you know, and focus on the youth. No, we can both coexist. We can all coexist. Intergenerational learning is the most powerful of
it's
learning,
the most
isn't
precious.
It? You know,
it's so precious.
So yeah, so I was, when this woman called me auntie, I had to journal that out. I had weeks of journaling that out and trying to work out. The other side to this is I'm single. I'm not in a relationship. Mm-hmm. And that is ostensibly by choice. Guys are hard work. They're hard work, man. And also I like me. I like my own company. I know that COVID has obviously meant that I have to be on my own, but bear with me. Mm-hmm. I like my own company. I don't know whether I haven't worked out whether this is because I'm still scared mm. because I was in a 20-year relationship and that was a bugger mm. or whether I trust, what would I call it, the universe. I feel that I'm moving towards whatever I'm moving towards, mm. you know, and I feel that in the past when I've gone on dates or when I've met guys, I've kind of molded myself into what I thought they thought I should be mm. and I don't want to do that anymore. So if I end up in a relationship and I've let go of the feeling that I feel I need to, in the past I was, you know, wanted to get married and wanted to say that I had a relationship and all that kind of stuff. I'm not that bothered anymore, you know, but I also haven't ruled it out. I'm just busy living my life. Does that make sense?
It does make so much sense. And I'm in a similar situation. I'm sitting here thinking, God, this needs to definitely be like a two-part conversation. A couple of hours deep on intimacy and relationships, because that is another aspect of the journey, the adventure of like, what does love look like at this stage of the game?
Oh, man, man. Like, and the thing is that Moni said about being in a relationship with a younger man. And I guess I have attracted younger men because I look younger. Mm-hmm. I feel young at heart. And guys my age, the 58-year-olds have a different... Mm. It's almost like the guys I attract, don't get me wrong, the guys who like me tend to be guys who think I should be grateful because I've almost like... Because I've got to this age and I should be grateful to have someone at this age. It's an odd thing.
Yeah.
It's an odd thing. And I'm not down for that. Sorry, love. No. You need to be grateful that I'm breathing the same air as you. Never mind. Exactly. You know. So I'm still working through my feelings and thoughts around being in a relationship. And I am very aware that some of that may be based in, I don't want anybody to stop me from doing what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's, you know, maybe I need to have a talk with myself, you know, I'm working on it. And I'm open to working on it.
I love the talks with yourself. And I do think the talks with yourself
in this space that we find ourselves in are deeper and richer if you allow it to be. Yeah. I think that people yeah. are denying themselves this relationship with themselves. Mm-hmm. And I want to invite folks to do that. So I am mindful of time.
No.
So also, y'all, people who are listening, Moni and Karen had to help me figure out the time difference.
That was funny. That was so that funny.
Wow. Three time zones.
Right. Three time zones. We are three time zones right yes. now. That's right.
Yeah.
But so what we tend to do towards the end of the conversations is I do a little bit of a disclaimer and a forecast. So the forecast is that I've made a commitment to writing a tangible Black Girls Guide.
Yes.
Yeah. I've made this commitment. Now, the disclaimer is that I intended to begin writing this and then the global pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I got really distracted and also had to refocus my energy on some things. So what I am doing is, you know, releasing a very small zine in the next few weeks. Like we're about 2-3 weeks out from the zine coming out, which is like a precursor to the guide. But I'm so excited. It's called Messages from the Menopausal Multiverse. And I think
that's what that is. Okay, right.
Now I get it.
It's all making sense now.
I'm trying to do some creative shit. I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm really. But anyway.
You are you're doing it, but you're doing pregnant. It. In that you are moment, initiation but... pregnant. It's wow. Oh, this yeah. is so good.
It is not...
So is this an exclusive? Are we? Is this the first? You know, you're kind of putting it out.
Have I said this to other? Well, you know, that's just no, yes, I have. When we did the autumnal equinox gathering, I did tell people to stay tuned. But I don't feel like I've mentioned on the podcast. Yeah. I have. I don't. Yeah. So I feel really excited to mention this again with you both. But I do always ask each of my guests if there were an offering that you would want to make to the guide, something you'd want to say to Black women and femmes and gender non-binary folk who are listening to this podcast about what it means to age, what it means to experience menopause. What would that be? What would you want to gift us? And so I'm gonna let you all give us your offering, and then we're gonna close out this conversation.
Okay, Karen, would you like to start?
I knew you were gonna say that. I'm gonna context this. I'm sitting in my living room, which you both would love. It is, the walls are terracotta. The colours are browns and burgundies and deep reds. And I'm sitting in a chair. I'll send you a picture afterwards. It's a chair that's covered in different colours, patchwork, anchora, bright patterned fabric. And I'm comfortable and I feel good. And whilst you were talking, I was thinking of the word opening. And I would like women who are aging or thinking about the next steps and what's coming, or people who are dreading it, I want them to literally think of it as an opening, because that's how it's been for me. It has opened. I've done more and experienced more and been more open to things in the last 5 years than I was in the previous 53. I feel like menopause is, you use the word portal on me. I feel like it's a opportunity to step. It's like up and out to another, a whole new experience. So yeah, what am I offering? That's it, isn't it? I'm a very visual person, so I'm seeing like a curtain, but the curtain is soft and inviting and sparkly and heavy. When you step through, it feels like a hug, but then when you're open, it's like Yeah, something much more vibrant. It's like your eyes are open. I'm going to shut up now.
Oh, that's wonderful. I have this visual of this resplendent space that's full of light where you get to see everything, the good, the good things and the hard things.
Right, right. And that I'm not trying to paint this, oh my God, it's all roses. It really isn't. But I don't want anybody to dread menopause. I really don't. But I also feel that I want them to recognize that it's something that it is an eye opener, actually. Yeah.
Yes, it is.
So that's my offering.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
What about you, Moni?
Okay, my offering. Us being together here was actually what inspires me to my offering. Then that means embracing all the parts of me, even those that seem far apart, mile-wise, super far apart, and we are so close and so near. And what's happening in this context also can happen within, that parts of me which I think that don't fit together or go together or are not linked, really embracing it and bring it together as a whole, coming into wholeness. And then this other thing, it's a favorite of mine, that owning the liminal space, owning the in-between space, owning that space that we are said cannot be owned, cannot be, or is not worthy to be owned, this menopause, this portal, just making it sacred. Because in this space, it's where really where magic happens. The space between ourselves is the space where exchange happens, where even electricity is and communion and alchemy is happening. And don't be afraid of any kind of change, because that's where the magic is. And just to not fit in. Really, it's not necessary. It's not necessary.
I'm so, 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 so happy that we got to have this conversation today. I know we're going to keep having these conversations. I know that this connection that I have been able to develop with both of you came online exactly when they were supposed to. I'll do a little truth in advertising for folks who are listening to the podcast. I started crying when Mo Mary got on the call. I was just really full of emotion and gratitude for finding spaces for Black women who don't live in the same country, who are very different cultures and upbringings and experiences, to find common space with each other, to reflect truth to each other, and to be a support and encouragement. And so I'm really grateful. As we're closing out, I want people to be able to find you. So I want to make sure that folk know how to follow you or find you on social media. So Karen, can you tell us your social media handles? And then Moni, tell us your social media handles. And I will, don't worry, I will also put them in the description of this episode. And I'm pretty sure that this episode is going to be called Sisters of the Yam, which is a nod to bell hooks and a nod to our sisterhood as Black women of African descent who all eat yams.
And they're very good for you.
They're very good for you. And also very much a part of our connective tissue to the motherland. So Karen, how can folk find you? And then Moni, how can folk find you?
So of course I have two accounts. On Instagram is where I tend to hang out. Menopause Whilst Black is the Instagram space where I talk all things menopause, and my podcast has been accepted by iTunes. Yay! So the first episode will drop this week, next week. Sorry. So by the time this comes out. So that's Menopause Whilst Black on all good platforms, I suppose. And I am also The Karen Arthur, which is where I also talk about menopause, but it's been going for longer and it's me, you know, fashion and sewing and all the stuff, and where you're happy, wearing clothes that lift your mood. So yeah.
That's right.
Okay, and mine is Instagram handle is simply Monica Odom, where I ramble off everything that happens daily in my life. And the other is my blog, the in-between dot space where I wrote where I write exactly about that, the in-between space. The one is born in, the one grows in, the one finds themselves in. Yeah. This is my little happy place in the internet.
Very good. So the bios are in the description, y'all, and you'll see lovely pictures as we promo this podcast episode. Give thanks so much for both of you. And I am manifesting my trip to Europe where I get to spend time with both of y'all, where I get to sit in a chair in your space, Karen, and drink hot chocolate.
Yes.
And I'm manifesting the space, Moni, where you take me on a walk and we get to sit underneath a tree. It's coming. It's coming. I know it's coming.
Hey y'all, I hope you enjoyed this latest episode of the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause. I told you were going to fall in love with Karen and Monica. It was such a sweet conversation. I really had in my mind a visual of us sitting in Karen's living room, curled up on couches with blankets over our legs, laughing and crying and listening to music. And I cannot wait until that is manifest. We're going to call that into existence in the very near future. If you're interested in learning more about Karen and Monica, I have listed their social media handles in the notes of the podcast, and I want you to follow them. And I've also had the great pleasure of being interviewed by Karen for her podcast, Menopause Whilst Black, and I want you to check that out. Check out all the fantastic work that Karen is doing to elevate the voices and experiences of Black women living in the UK. This is not a singular experience. This is a collective journey, and we get to do it together as kindred, and I'm really excited about that. Don't forget, if you want more information or want to learn more about the Black Girl's Guide to Surviving Menopause, check out the link in the podcast notes and check out our website. On our website, you can learn more about our zine, Messages from the Menopausal Multiverse, which you can read on issue or purchase on Blurb. You can purchase gear. That's right. We've got gear. We've got hoodies. We've got t-shirts. We've got tanks. We've got totes. And you can have them too. All of that is available to you on our website. If you're interested in supporting us financially, consider becoming a patron. There's information on our website around how to do that as well. And if you're not ready to become a monthly sustainer, you can make a one-time donation via Cash App or Venmo. And the links and the handles to that is also in the notes. Y'all, please don't forget the listener letters. We really do want to hear from you. We're interested in what you would like to hear us talk about in 2021. We're wrapping up the year. We're winding down. We're making preparation. And we want to plant seeds that will manifest in the new year. I want to thank you all so much for walking with us, vibing with us, and being so supportive of this labor of love. Please stay tuned. And we will see you on the dark side of the moon.